Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Alice Bryant, and Anne Ball. Later, we will present the story Luck by Mark Twain in American Stories. But first, here is John Russell.
Jigsaw puzzles for adults are becoming more popular in America. The puzzles have pieces of different shapes that, when put together, form a picture. People attend puzzle nights at coffee shops and libraries. Manufacturers design puzzles that have original artwork or even family photos. A.J. Jacobs is working on a book about puzzles, including jigsaws and crosswords. I was not as passionate about jigsaw puzzles at first, but once I started doing them, I saw the loveliness of these puzzles, he said. Jacobs added, puzzles are a very soothing and joyous way to spend a couple of hours. Jigsaw fans say the puzzles help ease daily stress. In addition, the puzzles give them a chance to step away from electronic devices. Abby Mattson, age 37, found puzzles helpful after the death of her dog 3 years ago. The puzzle was the only thing I could do to keep from crying, she said. Mattson and her friend Abby McDaniel started a puzzle group that now has 6 members. Members send photos of a completed puzzle before mailing it to the next person. It brings out an inner competition, McDaniel said. Many puzzlers, a name for people who like playing puzzles, prefer cardboard puzzles. But some like wooden ones. Some fans buy special frames, glue, and other tools to preserve finished jigsaw puzzles. Stave Puzzles, a company based in the state of Vermont, makes many kinds of wooden puzzles. Speaking with the Associated Press, company founder Steve Richardson described an increase in sales in recent years. Our sales are up 25% in the last decade, he said. Richardson added, we are now seeing orders from the children and grandchildren of some of our original customers. Shelby Comstock Britton attended the launch of Jiggy Puzzles, a New York-based puzzle company. Britton, who is 29 years old, said a puzzle night with drinks sounded perfect. She said she liked the idea of puzzles that are made for adults. I've always loved puzzles and will occasionally get a CVS puzzle, but it's kind of a bummer because it's made for an 8-year-old, she said. I can't Instagram that. I'm John Russell.
A record number of women currently serve in the United States Congress. They hold 23.5% of the 435 seats in the House of Representatives, and 26 out of the 100 members of the Senate are women. However, the U.S. government has a smaller percentage of female lawmakers than many other countries, including Mexico, Tunisia, Vietnam, and Zimbabwe. The Interparliamentary Union tried to rate 193 countries by the number of women they have serving in national government positions. The United States finished in 76th place in the study. The numbers are a little higher on the state government level. In 2019, about 29% of state legislators were women. Two female members of the U.S. Senate, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota and Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, are among the candidates seeking to win the presidential nomination of the Democratic Party. Some observers say the two are likely to be judged more critically than men during their efforts to become commander-in-chief. Women are expected to be twice as good, says Amanda Hunter. She is Director of Research and Communications for the Barbara Lee Family Foundation. The organization aims to make sure women are equally represented in U.S. politics. Women who are in office often change the nature of the political debate. Former U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp says women in elected office often work on issues that are most important to families, like paid family leave and security for retirees. They also take up issues like domestic violence and sexual abuse. Heitkamp added, "I think there are a whole lot of things that are in the public dialogue right now that would not be in that public dialogue if women weren't on the podium and on that stage." Heitkamp, a Democrat from North Dakota, served in the Senate from 2013 to 2019. During that time, she attended many dinners with female lawmakers from both major political parties. They worked together, for example, to avoid a federal government shutdown in 2013. A lot of women got into politics not, I don't mean to generalize on men, but not because they thought it was their destiny or they thought that the world couldn't survive without them, Heitkamp said. Voters tend to believe that women are motivated not by power and ego, but women are motivated because they want to see a change in the world. A 2015 study found that female senators worked with each other more often, were more likely to work with members of other parties, and were more active legislatively than male senators. Right now, the country needs more female leaders, says Michael Steele of Maryland. He was the first African American to chair the Republican National Committee. "Women tackle problems differently than men do," Steele noted. "Our politics have gotten hot. Oftentimes, the cooler head is going to be the woman who comes to the table and says, 'You all need to grow up and start to bring things back to a rational point.'"
"One, two, three," shouts Noradia Tumirin, a medical doctor and fitness trainer. "You can do it," she says approvingly as her client, Sarah Baharuddin, lies on her back and struggles to lift her legs in the air. Tumirin is leading Baharuddin in an exercise class. Baharuddin, age 35, is breathing heavily as she lifts her legs. She is 165 centimeters tall and weighs 110 kilograms. The Malaysian woman blames her diet for her weight gain.
I eat traditional Malay food, yes, and it's high in fat and calorie.
Baharuddin added that for years, she also was not physically active and did not exercise.
So, yes, years after years of doing that and becomes obesity.
Her story is a common one across Malaysia. About 50% of the country's adults are obese, and about 30% of young people are overweight. Sarah Baharuddin and husband Nazrul Muhammad are trying to change their lifestyles by exercising regularly and eating healthier food. Naradia Tumarin is now retired, but once served in the Malaysian Armed Forces. She is physically fit, measuring 157 centimeters tall and weighing just 56 kilograms. She says the country's obesity crisis is leading to high rates of heart disease and related medical conditions.
This obesity will lead to multiple illnesses such as hypertension, high cholesterol, heart illnesses, and diabetes.
Kevin Zari is one of Malaysia's leading fitness influencers. He founded a local weight loss movement called Jum Kurus, which means let's get thin or let's lose weight.
To help somebody not feel alone, and jump on the bandwagon with a group of people who are of similar objectives, goals, and desires.
Every year, thousands of Malaysians join six-week-long Jum Kurus fitness camps. They meet several times a week for exercises and to learn more about nutrition. There also are social media support groups. At one recent class, people did leg lifts, push-ups, and stretches. Kevin Zari says the average person at the camp drops 4 to 5 kilos of weight during the six-week program. But his real goal is to help Malaysians make healthy changes that will last a lifetime. I'm Alice Bryant.
Today, we answer a question from Kotaro in Japan. I want to learn about American culture. Can you tell me about that? Dear Kotaro, first, thank you for writing. One of the best ways to learn about the United States and its culture is to study American English. This opens the door to understanding Americans when you can read, listen, and watch them speaking about their lives. Follow the stories on VOA's Learning English website, and you will learn and improve your English. Watching American-made television shows and movies is another way to learn about American culture. Watch carefully in these programs to see what daily life is like for Americans. Next, you can read books and articles written by and about Americans. Many U.S. newspapers, magazines, and websites publish stories about cultural information online. Look for websites and writers from different parts of the country. People in the southern U.S. are different from those living in the Northeast, Midwest, or West. If you are interested in an American singer, artist, or writer, follow them on social media. There you can see what Americans are talking and posting about. Think about how it is different or the same from your culture. Museums are wonderful places to find out about American culture. If you travel to Washington, D.C., make sure to visit the Smithsonian Institution, the world's largest museum, education, and research center. If you cannot come here, there is still a lot to see and learn about American history and culture online. American culture combines the rich traditions of all the people who have come here in hopes of finding their American dream. We hope you enjoy finding out about American culture. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Ann Ball.
Our story today is called Luck. It was written by Mark Twain. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
I was at a dinner in London, given in honor of one of the most celebrated English military men of his time. I do not want to tell you his real name and titles. I will just call him Lieutenant General Lord Arthur Scoresby. I cannot describe my excitement when I saw this great and famous man. There he sat, the man himself, in person, all covered with medals. I could not take my eyes off him. He seemed to show the true mark of greatness. His fame had no effect on him. The hundreds of eyes watching him, the worship of so many people, did not seem to make any difference to him. Next to me sat a clergyman, who was an old friend of mine. He was not always a clergyman. During the first half of his life, he was a teacher in the military school at Woolwich. There was a strange look in his eye as he leaned toward me and whispered, "Privately, he is a complete fool." He meant, of course, the hero of our dinner. This came as a shock to me. I looked hard at my friend. I could not have been more surprised if he had said the same thing about Napoleon, or Socrates, or Solomon. But I was sure of two things about the clergyman. He always spoke the truth, and his judgment of men was good. Therefore, I wanted to find out more about our hero as soon as I could. Some days later, I got a chance to talk with the clergyman, and he told me more. These are his exact words. "About 40 years ago, I was an instructor in the military academy at Woolwich when young Scoresby was given his first examination. I felt extremely sorry for him. Everybody answered the questions, well, intelligently, while he, why, dear me, he did not know anything, so to speak. He was a nice, pleasant young man. It was painful to see him stand there and give answers that were miracles of stupidity. I knew, of course, that when examined again, he would fail and be thrown out. So, I said to myself, it would be a simple, harmless act to help him as much as I could. I took him aside and found he knew a little about Julius Caesar's history, but he did not know anything else. So I went to work and tested him and worked him like a slave. I made him work over and over again on a few questions about Caesar, which I knew he would be asked. If you will believe me, he came through very well on the day of the examination. He got high praise, too, while others, who knew 1,000 times more than he, were sharply criticized. By some strange, lucky accident, he was asked no questions but those I made him study. Such an accident does not happen more than once in 100 years. Well, all through his studies, I stood by him with the feeling a mother has for a disabled child. And he always saved himself by some miracle. I thought that what in the end would destroy him would be the mathematics examination. I decided to make his end as painless as possible. So I pushed facts into his stupid head for hours. Finally, I let him go to the examination to experience what I was sure would be his dismissal from school. Well, sir, try to imagine the result. I was shocked out of my mind. He took first prize, and he got the highest praise. I felt guilty day and night. What I was doing was not right, but I only wanted to make his dismissal a little less painful for him. I never dreamed it would lead to such strange, laughable results. I thought that sooner or later, one thing was sure to happen. The first real test, once he was through school, would ruin him. Then the Crimean War broke out. I felt that sad for him that there had to be a war. Peace would have given this donkey a chance to escape from ever being found out as being so stupid. Nervously, I waited for the worst to happen. It did. He was appointed an officer, a captain of all things. Who could have dreamed that they would place such a responsibility on such weak shoulders as his? I said to myself that I was responsible to the country for this. I must go with him and protect the nation against him as far as I could. So I joined up with him, and away we went to the field. And there, oh dear, it was terrible. Mistakes, fearful mistakes. Why, he never did anything that was right. Nothing but mistakes. But you see, nobody knew the secret of how stupid he really was. Everybody misunderstood his actions. They saw his stupid mistakes as works of great intelligence. They did, honestly. His smallest mistakes made a man in his right mind cry and shout and scream, too, to himself, of course. And what kept me in a continual fear was the fact that every mistake he made increased his glory and fame. I kept saying to myself that when at last they find out about him, it will be like the sun falling out of the sky. He continued to climb up, over the dead bodies of his superiors. Then, in the hottest moment of one battle, down went our colonel. My heart jumped into my mouth, for Scoresby was the next in line to take his place. "Now we are in for it," I said. The battle grew hotter. The English and their allies were steadily retreating all over the field. Our regiment occupied a position that was extremely important. One mistake now would bring total disaster. And what did Scoresby do this time? He just mistook his left hand for his right hand, that was all. An order came for him to fall back and support our right. Instead, he moved forward and went over the hill to the left. We were over the hill before this insane movement could be discovered and stopped. And what did we find? A large and unsuspected Russian army waiting. And what happened? Were we all killed? That is exactly what would have happened in 99 cases out of 100. But no, those surprised Russians thought that no one regiment by itself would come around there at such a time. It must be the whole British army, they thought. They turned tail. Away they went over the hill and down into the field in wild disorder, and we after them. In no time there was the greatest turnaround you ever saw. The Allies turned defeat into a sweeping and shining victory. The Allied commander looked on, his head spinning with wonder, surprise, and joy. He sent right off for Scoresby and put his arms around him and hugged him on the field in front of all the armies. Scoresby became famous that day as a great military leader, honored throughout the world. That honor will never disappear while history books last. He is just as nice and pleasant as ever, but he still does not know enough to come in out of the rain. He is the stupidest man in the universe. Until now, nobody knew it but Scoresby and myself. He has been followed day by day, year by year, by a strange luck. He has been a shining soldier in all our wars for years. He has filled his whole military life with mistakes. Every one of them brought him another honorary title. Look at his chest. Flooded with British and foreign medals. Well, sir, every one of them is the record of some great stupidity or other. They are proof that the best thing that can happen to a man is to be born lucky. I say again, as I did at the dinner, Scoresby's a complete fool.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.